The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
All right, welcome back in. Bruce Hooley Show, Thursday edition. Jack Windsor filling in for Bruce. I'm editor-in-chief of the Ohio Press Network, also host of the Windsor Report. You can listen at 5 o'clock during your drive time, 5 to 6. All right, I want to welcome him right in because I know we have a couple things to talk about. He's a friend of the show. He hasn't been with me for a while, though. He's Ladd Dilgaard. Ladd, welcome in. How's it going today, brother?
Jack, it's going great. Thanks for having me back on, buddy.
Absolutely. So a couple things I'm interested in getting your take on. One is quite timely after looks like Politico put out a report, and it was yesterday, actually about 5:45 yesterday, on the Trump campaign will host Florida donor retreat with potential VP picks. The May event in Palm Beach is expected to attract around 400 donors. Guess who's on the list?
J.D. Vance.
You got it. A copy of the invitation obtained by Politico lists 16 special guests for the May 3 through 5 event in Palm Beach. Among them are some of the top names being mentioned for Trump's general election ticket. Senators Marco Rubio of Florida, Tim Scott, South Carolina, J.D. Vance of Ohio, as well as Governors Doug Burgum of North Dakota, Kristi Noem of South Dakota, Reps Elise Stefanik and Byron Donalds. So you actually bird dogged for me an article in The American Conservative. And if you're listening, get to The American Conservative. Headline is How Ohio Became the Center of the Republican World. Great read. I'm envious, Ladd. I wish I had written it. Let me get your take on that. What are your thoughts on J.D. potentially being a VP running mate of Donald Trump?
So a lot of the pundits and analysts focus on the race, gender, state of origin, those sort of things for a VP candidate, hoping to like pick up an extra few votes or an extra state or something like that. And the results and analysis of that over the last 5 decades has been pretty dubious. You don't really pick up a lot of blacks if you get a black, running mate, or you don't get a lot of extra credit for having a racial minority or a woman or anything like that.
But you do get a pick that thinks that the women's brackets were not made until 2022. You do get that. Sorry, I digress. Go ahead, Ladd.
Well, that leads me to my next point, which is ask someone to run who is sharp and a good campaigner. Mike Pence wasn't bad at that. Sarah Palin was bad at that.
Yep.
So don't do anything to harm yourself. And, I've got a different take on this than a lot of people do. I don't really want a VP candidate who could be a value add somewhere else, like Vivek Ramaswamy.
Yep.
I want a guy like that in a leadership position where he can execute. Mm-hmm. And J.D. Vance falls into that category for me. He's superb at what he does. I think he'd make a great attorney general. He'd be great in a job where results and execution matters, which is in real short supply in Washington.
Yep.
So I would hope that Mr. Trump nominates somebody who can help him get elected, but isn't taking that person away from a real job, because the VP's really not a real job.
I like how you put that, and I'll give you the conspiracy theory. The whisper campaign has been afoot for a while now in Ohio, and that is that J.D. Vance will likely be on the ticket, and if he wins, then obviously that seat is vacant. And so who would be the next U.S. senator? Obviously Sherrod Brown or Bernie Moreno, they're running against each other. But if Vance's seat is vacant, and scuttlebutt is that Vivek Ramaswamy and – John Husted are thick as thieves, that they really like each other, that when Ramaswamy was preparing for the presidential debates, that John Husted played the role of Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, and that Ramaswamy might be the pick for the U.S. Senate seat. Does that change your mind at all?
Well, I didn't know that Husted would be in good working order with Vivek. That's interesting. But Vivek needs to be in a position of importance. He's a super talent, super smart guy. So if it's the Senate, great. But I think Secretary of the Treasury or something in the Trump cabinet would be great too, where he can really make a difference.
Okay. Okay, I'm vibing with you on that. I get it. I don't know who it's going to be. I always joke that Donald Trump may not know who it's going to be. He might step up to the podium and make a game time decision. Okay, you sent me a text and you said you want to talk about this Harlem Township and Westerville merger for a minute. What's going on there?
Yeah, this is a great story. So we're going to do a stand and speak episode. If you go to BW Strategy Pack on YouTube and subscribe, you can see our weekly videos, which normally drop every Sunday at 6 p.m. We're holding off on doing this week's a little bit because this is such a there's a lot of complex matters that go along with this. But the short story is that out of the blue in February, it was announced that Harlem Township in the rural area in Delaware County was planning to merge or at least explore a merger opportunity with the city of Westerville. And on this announcement, you can imagine the Harlem Township residents were, you know, met this with glee and parades and, you know, excitement. The prospect of $4.5 million of tax revenue being vacuumed out of their pocket by the city of Westerville sent them into a tizzy. They were livid.
Yep.
So this goes into the Intel building, the Intel plant out in Licking County, New Albany area, and it's being used. That building is being used as kind of a power grab opportunity by a lot of leftists and kind of pro-government, pro-expansion folks in this area.
Interesting. So where does it stand now?
So what happened was the Harlem Township residents went berserk.
Yeah.
there was talks of cars being keyed by of the trustees and threats. One of the trustees who was just elected, Matt Jaeger, quit. And there was a lot of hostility at the meetings. So they dropped, Harlem Township dropped the exploration of this merger. Now, it could come up next year. It won't be on this November's ballot, but it could be in future years. And they disbanded this thing called the Strategic Planning Committee, which was supposed to investigate and analyze these kind of things. But, you know, what really happened, just my take on a couple of things, was there was a lot of gaslighting and a lot of shady things going on. Carl Richeson, a Harlem Township trustee, said that the proposed merger would allow Harlem Township, which is primarily rural, mm-hmm. preserve the community's rural quality of life. And that just met everyone with, you got to be kidding me. That's not what's going to happen. There's going to be an expansion yep. of development and population from Westerville on up into Harlem Township. And those two entities don't even border on each other. I mean, they have to cross a mile and a half of some other township to get into Harlem. So people don't like being lied to. They would have to adopt Westerville's 2% tax. And they would have one representative on Westerville's 7-2 Democrat majority city council. You know, so they would really have to buy into kind of the woke Westerville situation there. Westerville is not a bad city, but it's not Harlem Township. It's a rural area, and those folks there want to keep it that way.
Hey, we're out of time on this segment. You want to stick for another few minutes on the other side of the break? I do have a couple other topics I'd throw your way.
Sounds good, Jack. Thanks.
All right. Yeah, stay tuned. Ladd Dilgaard is with us, and he'll be with us Next segment, you're listening to The Bruce Hooley Show, 98.9 FM, The Answer. Rounding third, heading home. Welcome back to final segment of The Bruce Hooley Show, Thursday edition. Jack Windsor filling in for Bruce. Bruce will be back with you tomorrow. I know that you're excited about that. I'm excited about it. I love hearing his analysis. But it's always an honor and a pleasure to be here with you. So thank you for tuning in and giving me a chance to deliver you some news and commentary. I'm joined by Ladd Dilgaard. Ladd, thanks for sticking with me. I appreciate it.
Sure, Jack. Thank you.
So Ladd and I were talking, news du jour, I guess. And this just came across my desk. So I'm going to ask you about this, Ladd. It appears the Supreme Court seems open to a middle ground on Trump immunity. And based on what I looked at, the Supreme Court says, the argument before the Supreme Court is we have to tease out what acts Trump performed that were private versus, in his role as president. So this might get a somewhat favorable treatment. As you can imagine, the Democrat-appointed justices of the Supreme Court appeared more aligned with the government's position during oral arguments. So you've got, Ketanji Brown, you've got some of the other boneheads. I shouldn't say boneheads. I shouldn't do that. I'm not going to go there. I want to get your take on how you think this case will come out if you had to bet.
Yeah, a couple things about that. They have to separate the prosecution of presidential actions like going to war or, bombing Iraq or something like that. From a real life crime, like if the president hurt someone in a car accident or killed somebody in the White House or something like that.
Right.
They've got to divide that up, and then they have to define somehow what are presidential actions. Like you laid it out pretty well there, I think. So that definition, I would think, would be remanded back to a lower court to decide upon whether all these things that Trump has been accused of fall into that camp. I don't think that either side is going to win the whole thing today.
Right.
But the leftists who are prosecuting this, maybe they need to be a little careful on what they wish for, because maybe someday Republicans will have a backbone and start treating a Democrat president in the same way that Republican presidents have been treated. Like, you've made this decision or you question the election results, which presidents do all the time. You're questioning the election results in Georgia. Therefore, we're going to indict you for election interference. Maybe if presidents don't have the kind of immunity that Trump is reasonably looking for here, maybe it could swing back to hurt them in the future. So if I had to bet, I would say that it's going to be a split decision and they're going to remand this back to a lower court and say that presidents have some kind of immunity, but that immunity needs to be defined a little bit better.
Yeah, and I'm going to encourage listeners, if you have not heard the episode I had with Ohio Attorney General Dave Yost, he filed an amicus brief with the court, and he's suggesting a two-pronged test. You need to go up to 989theanswer.com, and you can pull it down from the Windsor Report. And it's a really good conversation about we have to define some of these terms, because this really is unprecedented. And to your point, Ladd, I mean, I don't think Joe Biden's out of the woods here. I mean, he's got document issues. Now, I call him quid pro Joe. He did that as VP. I believe. But this guy doesn't have a sterling reputation either. And I think we've got to be careful. Although, when I think about our justice system and about contesting elections, that's one of the things that they're really crying about with Trump. I look in the same state and I go, I think Stacey Abrams denied the results of her first gubernatorial race there. Nothing's been done to her. So, we have this two-tiered system of justice. But I'm just kvetching a little bit. Speaking of two-tiered system of justice, or maybe a two-tiered system of reporting, I want to get your take, because this has a local flavor. Two arrests were made in Columbus involving the campus protests at Ohio State University. Some people think that what's going on is an exhibition of anti-Semitism. These anti-Israel activists are performing. What are your thoughts on what's going on at Ohio State? And do you think that these students and I would say even paid agitators have a right to be on campus and to protest and disrupt?
I haven't read closely what's happening at Ohio State specifically, but I did read about what Texas did. And they went in and cleaned it up and arrested people immediately, shut it down, just wiped them off the compound. I mean, that's the kind of thing that needs to happen with these protests, which are illegal. They're interfering with the ongoing operation of a university.
Yeah.
They need to start growing a backbone and dealing with these protesters who are denying other students their rights to go learn or Jewish people to even be on campus. And then some of these protesters are blocking transportation. They're blocking highways or bridges. Those are acts of terrorism. Those are acts of shutting down economic activity, the same as blowing up a bridge or something in its after effects. So I would say that, anti-Semitism is something that I never thought I would see in such widespread degree that I'm seeing it right now. If this was any other race of people or a minority, I mean, there would be cries of horror, all over the place. But this is absurd.
I've emailed and called Dan Tierney to inquire whether Governor Mike DeWine is going to proactively issue a statement or perhaps follow bold leadership of Ron DeSantis, who outlawed an anti-Israel group, Students for Justice in Palestine, from Florida's colleges last fall. And then I had an Ohio Republican Party State Central Committee member, Jessica Franz, say the Ohio Republican Party passed this resolution condemning Hamas and the global rise of anti-Semitism back in December. So, yes, DeWine has essentially been directed by the party to make this issue a priority by speaking to it publicly. However, as we are well aware by now, DeWine doesn't represent the will of the Republican voters in Ohio, but rather the special interests of lobbyists that own him. About 45 seconds here. Are you surprised that DeWine is not behind the camera or in front of the camera going, hey, we shouldn't do that?
It's just another thing that I'm ashamed of what kind of leadership we have here in Ohio, this being a Republican voter state. Someone mentioned on TV the other day about the strong responses that would come from Tennessee, Texas, and Florida and other Republican-led states. And I thought to myself, not here in Ohio.
No.
This spineless little guy is not going to take on these protesters and make a strong move. He's going to kind of try to play the middle ground like a weakling.
Yeah, I agree with that. And in fact, I think Matt Mayer is a friend of the Bruce Hooley Show. Matt, if you're listening, you need to give me a call. I want to get you on the Windsor Report. But he wrote a piece that was published by the Federalist. I want to say it was maybe a week and a half ago. And he essentially said what you said, that, 73% of what we do is controlled by Republicans in this state, but they just aren't bold. They don't act with strength, and they certainly don't act like true conservative Republicans. I'm not surprised.
No doubt.
You're not surprised. Hey, Lad, thanks for making time to be with us today. I appreciate it, brother. We'll have you on the Windsor Report soon. Enjoy the rest of your Thursday.
Sounds great, Jack. Thanks for having me on. Keep up the good work.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And thank you for listening to 98.9 FM, The Answer. And Bruce Hooley, thank you for allowing me to fill in for you. I know everyone's excited to have you back tomorrow. So make sure you tune in 11 o'clock. Bruce will be here.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
with in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.